So like Google Trends, for example, you can see trend lines in terms of what people are searching for. What are the topics? What are the products? What are their concerns, right? When you're going into, when we were going into the pandemic, you were able to see sort of the spread of COVID as they were searching for their symptoms, you know, and what was happening in their particular areas. Yes. We were serving, you know, the UK, you know, NIH, you know, the National Institute of Health, and providing them with details about the spread of COVID. With commercial clients, they tend to look a lot at, you know, things like competitive pricing and competitive promotions, but also supply chain, right? And anything to do with recalls, WARN notices, you know, any layoffs that their competitors might be doing. You know, there's sort of a universe of data sets that can signal either positive or negative trends for companies.
Hey, and welcome to the Momentum Podcast, the show where fintech meets AI. I'm your host, Stan Altschuler, investor, founder, an advisor to some of the world's top hedge funds, asset managers, and data companies. Each week, we'll dive into practical AI strategies to help you cut through the noise, beat data overload, build smarter workflows, and turn your ideas into results. We'll explore everything from AI tools for your daily workflows to building data-driven growth engines for your organizations. Here, you'll discover what's next in finance and how to stay ahead of the curve with AI. Let's dive in.
Thank you, Stan. I really appreciate you having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Please give us just a few words about your journey and how you came about to work at Sequentum.
Well, I'm CEO of Sequentum. I was recruited by WorldQuant back in 2017 when they did a seed round into the company. And I was able to bring my expertise in standing up large teams and automated data scraping operations with compliance and quality.
And for those who don't know, WorldQuant is a world-renowned hedge fund that's actually a pod in Millennium, right? Is that right?
That's right.
And they're known for aggregating a lot of different alphas from a lot of different sources and a lot of different data. And we're going to talk about some of the things that you're currently doing and how it rhymes with that. But when you think back, you know, you were recruited from WorldQuant. What was the big problem that investors were having with data? What is the big underlying issue that really Sequentum is trying to solve?
Oh, I wouldn't say it was a problem. I'd say it was an opportunity.
Love it.
I mean, at this point, I think everyone can see that alt data is driving 95% of investment decisions. And at the time, web data was about 40% of that alternative data universe. And people really hadn't wrapped their minds around how to integrate this data. And web data was also, you know, there were hundreds of millions of dollars getting invested into bot blocking. So it was becoming more technical and more difficult than ever to get web data with quality so that those decisions could be trusted.
Yeah, that's interesting. So just in terms of the use cases and the opportunity, right, it's changed a lot lately, right? Public data has been scraped for many, many, many years. What are the major use cases? Can you go over that? And I know you have many different types of clients from the private sector, certainly investors, very interested in data, like pricing data, inventory, things like that. But also from the angle of some of your corporate clients, maybe some of the, in, to the extent that you can talk about that in the public domain, what are kind of like some of the varying use cases that these organizations have for this data?
And the fascinating thing about serving the finance industry is that they basically cover every single industry and every KPI. So the use cases for finance are the same as the use cases for government and for commercial, and then some. You know, so the fascinating thing is that the alt data or external data is basically data that is outside of the realm of the regulatory reporting that companies have to do. Yeah, right. And so it's all of the sort of in-between data. So it's review sentiment, it's, you know, anything about, you know, like right now I'm just thinking of like what's happening in the news. You know, there's sort of this war, maybe economic warfare happening, right? So obviously the government would be interested in a lot of the same sort of signals that the private sector would be interested in. So like Google Trends, for example, you can see trend lines in terms of what people are searching for. What are the topics? What are the products? What are their concerns, right? When we were going into the pandemic, you were able to see sort of the spread of COVID as they were searching for their symptoms, you know, and what was happening in their particular areas. We were serving, you know, the UK, you know, NIH, you know, the National Institute of Health, and providing them with details about the spread of COVID. With commercial clients, they tend to look a lot at, you know, things like competitive pricing and competitive promotions, but also supply chain, right? And anything to do with recalls, WARN notices, you know, any layoffs that their competitors might be doing, you know, there's sort of a universe of data sets that can signal either positive or negative trends for companies.
So for companies, it totally makes a lot of sense. And I come from that world, obviously. Investors of all stripes now interested in alternative data, even private investors very interested in, you know, how these portfolio companies are affected with Google Trends, I mean, is a big one. And yeah, the COVID example is particularly interesting because you could isolate the outbreaks just by what people search in the areas where the search volume spike. It's fascinating. So obviously investors have a very specific use case in mind, right? Because they want to understand which industries are well positioned, which industries are under risk, and then drilling into the tickers, which companies have a wide moat, let's say, and where it's being eroded, especially right now with so many changes. This, I think, market is very ripe for disruption right now with AI. It's easier to build things. And I think the moats are now coming under question, as we could see with some of these SaaS companies as well. But how do you differentiate? Like, for investors, it's definitely interesting, right? The impact of this data it has on the actual tickers. But for the other clients, why are they looking at this data? This is just interesting for me as an investor. I get it, but why would anybody else really need this data?
I mean, for example, like we have a risk alert, right? So a risk alert that goes out to compliance teams, right? They give us an upload of their CSV upload of their list of data vendors that they depend on for their decision making. And we'll send them alert for if there's a cyber breach or fraud or litigation with that name. So that's just one tiny little example of the signal. That's also a financial client, but it's basically any kind of signal that affects either their risk landscape or any of the investments that they're making, any decisions they're making. So a lot of our customers are running algorithms, whether it's yield algorithms or pricing algorithms or trading algorithms. The data that we're feeding them is driving those decisions. Mm. Some of it's automated, some of it's not, right? So if it's a commercial customer, they're basically looking at a lot of what their competitors are doing, but also what's happening in the market, right? If there's, you know, like, again, I go back to the pandemic because there were so many great examples, which, you know, aren't touching anybody's intellectual property nowadays, right? Because their data sets are their intellectual property. But like, for example, like Crocs, right? Crocs went insane during the pandemic.
Yes.
And so did the ingredients for slime, right? Like Elmer's glue, like went through the roof because everyone on TikTok was sharing videos on how to make slime and everyone was going crazy with this slime, right? And if you got ahead of that, if you got ahead of the trends, and
Stanley
you were able
Cups
to pull
was
those
another
trends,
one. Yep.
Yeah. So you can pull trends from TikTok. You can pull trends from any social media, from news feeds, from, you know, obviously from reviews, sentiment. You know, there's all kinds of ways that you can detect the signal, right? And you can detect it also from retail sites and e-commerce sites. So you can look at things like inventory on some of these sites. Remember when we were looking at, you know, everyone was searching for the outdoor heaters. You could basically go and see what stores had it in stock. Well, you can go and look at what's in stock for any product. And you
and
can
cars,
see what's flying
like
off the shelf.
In the lot, right?
Yeah. Yep. You can see what's flying off the shelf. So, for example, another aged example is Tesla, right? Remember that summer when there was all this news, are they going to be able to raise the money? Are they going to hold? What's happening?
Yes.
So we were scanning everything. We were scanning the Tesla site for their own inventory, used car sites for Tesla inventory. Is it holding? Is it selling? Is it flying off the shelves? Is there more and more? Are there more and more Teslas getting sold? You know, what's the consumer sentiment? Are they holding their value? What about the recalls on various Tesla parts? You know, on and on and on. So there were scores of data sets that were factoring into that decision. And some funds were going long, some were going short.
Yep.
They were making different choices based on that
based on data.
But the data was informing those choices.
Yeah, that's something I've seen a lot in alternative data. It's really, you know, two different analysts can look at the same data set and have a different interpretation because one has maybe a shorter term view, another has a longer term view. One is looking at a different KPI, one is looking at a moat, one is looking at competitive pressure. That's one of the most fascinating things about alternative data. It's certainly a lot of signal in there, but the way you tease out that signal is really up to you. That's up to your clients. You're just providing them the input. Now, you talk often
I saw something on LinkedIn recently. There was a comment that someone had posted an article from Times of Israel that was saying that hedge funds had an unfair advantage because they had bigger budgets to buy this data. You know, that generated a lot of chatter. And my response was, you know, well, if it was an unfair advantage, percentage, right, they would basically be beating the market 100% of the time, right? That's not really what we're seeing. There's still that human in the loop who's that the ultimate decision is comes down to that analyst or that portfolio manager who's deciding, yes, I believe this data. Yes, I trust this data. Yes, I want to go long or short or whatever their strategy is. And it's definitely not easy.
And there's so much more going on in hedge funds that it just requires a separate podcast altogether. It's not just, yes, I think there is an advantage because they have all of that data, but it's also very expensive to interpret it and to make sense out of it, to trade on it.
Yeah.
And there's many, many other things, right? Like exposures and risk adjustment. And you know, it's hard to compare. But you talk about, maybe just a quick little pivot, you talk about probabilistic data versus deterministic data in some of your other work that I've seen.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that? Like, what is the... Is that just like a statistical sample versus like the full complete body of data? And what type of data do we have as hedge funds? Which type is that? Is that probabilistic or deterministic?
Well, let's put it into context, right? I mean, this data is driving decision-making. So you really need to have trust in this data. And so for us, when you look at an LLM extracting data, and there's all these, there's been, you know, since ChatGPT came out, we've had this explosion of AI scraping platforms or AI powered scraping.
Right.
But the LLM is really like, it doesn't have a full set of logical reasoning capabilities, right? I mean, it's probabilistic in the way that it's pulling data out. And that it's stochastic. It's like guesswork, right? And out of the box, right, we've all seen these amazing AI powered demos, right? They're fantastic and it's amazing. And there's 60% accurate out of the box, right? And you put all this effort into a workflow and, you know, maybe 3 months in, you're working full time on it and you're getting to 80% accuracy. It's very difficult to get to 99.9% accuracy.
Right.
And at the time of scraping, like Cloudflare, for example, they just came out with a scraping API and immediately the security people were hammering it and sending, you know, this strong message out, this is really bad, right? Mm. They put up all these sites and they pointed the Cloudflare scraping API at it. And it was, and they had embedded all of these hidden messages behind the displayed page that were giving it all kinds of garbage data and poisoning the data, right? A lot of, you know, there's all kinds of ways to block bots, and this is one of them. And anyone using one of those black box APIs that's using AI to extract the data, you are probably getting the data that you think is on the site, right? And that's
and
not
that's what
okay
you mean by probabilistic.
Yeah.
That's so what you mean by probabilistic. Yes.
Yes. So yes, that's a probability, like you're probably getting something. Deterministic is the old school way, and we've been doing this for 18 years. You're going at it, you know exactly what you're getting. And in the case of the Sequentum platform, we have this very robust sort of sieve that we're putting every single field of every row of data through. Does it match expectations? And we can configure very, very finite rules about, you know, what that data is expected to be. So the second it's not coming across as expected, there's an error, and there may be handling for the error if the site's doing A-B testing. Maybe we go down a different route. Or maybe there isn't, and it just says, ooh, I don't know what to do with this. This is not right. And then it immediately alerts a human to come in and make sure that agent is doing exactly what you need it to be doing and nothing different. And the site is giving good data. So that's the difference between probabilistic and deterministic. We use AI, right? We use AI to generate agents. We use AI to figure out, you know,
so
what
talk to me about that, right?
Settings.
So if, you know, I hear exactly what you're saying, right? Like the way these fundamental models right now are built, that probabilistic nature is really a feature, right, for them, not a bug, that they want that creativity factor. They want to be able to come up with the next probable word to spit out at you. That's how these LLMs are built. Does that make it completely, like, not usable? Like, you know, as continue that story, like, you are obviously using AI agents somehow. Does that just mean human in the loop needs to verify everything, or can we get a little bit further? Can we do some automation work? It's like, where do we draw the line and say, okay, AI handle 90% of this or whatever, and then humans better step in?
Yeah. Okay. So basically, LLMs are fantastic. We love them. We love this AI.
Love
We're
them too.
So happy that we have this capability. It's the best, right? But because it's just going to fill in the blanks if it doesn't get an answer, and it's not going to tell you when it's hallucinating.
Right.
This is the problem, right? A lot of our customers are in regulated industries, right. And they can't have data that, oh, that, you know, they need defensibility. They need auditability. They need an evidence-based process that shows that this data is legit, and they need to trust the data. And so what we do is we use the AI to generate agents, which it does very, very well. We use it to also figure out what are all the blocking settings. Like, our platform has all these settings in it. What are the settings that work to unblock you on a specific site? All that human mimetic engineering we have built into the platform. It's just speeds up the process with AI. Fantastic. We can also implement a process that auto-generates a new agent based on some concept of self-healing, but we won't ever, I don't think, not with the current LLM AI anyway, trust it enough to let it just automatically self-heal in production.
Yeah.
Right? So we always want that human in the loop, and you want the human in the loop for many reasons, right? Legally, we actually have customers that require us to attest in our contracts that we will not use AI in their data collection process.
Oof.
Right? Because there isn't a good legal framework for dealing with data that's generated by AI. First of all, who owns it?
Right.
Who owns that data? And who is responsible for that data? Right? It just doesn't really work. Like, it's not a complete thought. Like, people thought at the beginning of 2025, thought that the LLMs were going to get more accurate, faster, and cheaper.
Yep.
And it just didn't happen. Instead, what happened is people understood that it was just probabilistic. And that has many useful applications, but not
for chat. It's great. For just general chat, it's amazing, right? Like, if you want to talk about, like, help me plan out my career, the next career step, and, you know, help me apply to a job, that's great. But in the finance industry, where most of my clients are as well, you know, they kind of echo your sentiment. They say this over and over and over again. We just don't have the trust. The thing will hallucinate sometimes, but it won't tell you. It'll act very confident that the answer is right. And then, again, what you're saying is, like, who's responsible for that? You can't just go and yell at ChatGPT. You have to kind of, like, almost validate every single data point, at which point it becomes a lot less automated than what you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, what are you doing? Yeah, right. No, it's not good enough. There may be other AI that comes out. I mean, when Jan LeCun left Meta, I took his paper full of mathematical formulas and stuck it into Notebook LLM and spent some time trying to understand what it was that drove him to leave Meta and start his own company. You know, he was one of the earliest and most vocal voices saying the LLM's not good enough. And it's interesting, right? I mean, maybe he's really onto something. Maybe there is an AGI that's around the corner. My eyes are wide open. My ears are, you know, I'm ready to receive that, you know, some news that they've figured something out. But until then, we are going to have a human in the loop.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it echoes the sentiment that I'm hearing a lot from this industry, from hedge fund managers, from folks that sell into banks. It makes a lot of sense. Do you see the mode of consumption of data changing at all with all the way this technology is changing and the explosion of LLMs? Sure, they're not perfect, but, you know, they're undeniable. You spend a lot of time at conferences like Battlefin and so on and so forth. You speak to a lot of people. How is the actual data consumption changing? Are we still going out and, you know, scraping data, putting that through our old model? Or is there some sort of fundamental shift that is happening that's maybe like a little bit more direct value monetization from the data that's out there?
I think that the general consumption of web data has gone through the roof because people have realized how much value there is and they understand more what the value is. And it's so much easier to understand what the data sources are that are good. You could just go to Gemini and say, Gemini, I'm interested in Tesla. What data sources should I be pulling and how should I analyze them? Or Claude or, you know, whatever. Used to be that
it'll
people
do a good
call
job.
Us up. Yeah, they used to call us up and say, you know, can you tell me, like, I'll never forget this one call. Somebody called me from Turkey. They urgently wanted to have a call. And his question was, I hear that you're serving web data into hedge funds. I'm starting a hedge fund. And can you tell me all the data sources they're pulling? And I was like, no, of course I can't. But if that person calls me now, I can say, I can't tell you what my customers are pulling. But if you tell me what industries you're interested in, I can go back and forth on ChatGPT with you, and we can come up with a set of requirements, and after an hour, we'll have an SOW.
Wow.
You know, it's,
and
like,
so that's
the world
how,
has really changed.
And you would be, so you do that for clients, you go from idea, hey, I think, you know, same store sales for this particular company, or like, I think tracking inventory is interesting, and you go from idea to finished
ideas.
Product? From the customer, I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
We can help them flush it out into the requirements that we need to turn it into a full-blown operation. integration. And the other thing is Claude, right? It's so fantastic what Claude is able to do. So Claude can actually prototype a lot of scrapes for the analysts. Mm. So they come to us. They don't actually need us to flesh out their ideas. They come to us with mostly fleshed out ideas. This is what I want to do. Here are the requirements. And this is how I want it structured because this is how I'm going to analyze it. Maybe they'll tell us how they're going to analyze it. Maybe not. But so it's a little bit of both, right? The really inexperienced folks, we can help them get them over the line. But the really experienced folks is just higher volume, faster clip of scale. You know, when you sign a new customer, it's land and expand, right? I mean, they just have long lists of data sources that they need. Maybe they have internal teams that do web scraping, but they can't really deal with the, you know, very strict compliance rules and also the incredibly difficult blocking, you know, that a company like Sequentum can handle because of our deep tech.
Yeah, that's interesting how to get around the intentional blocking that these companies have. So what if somebody was like a little bit less data savvy and they're coming to you and they're asking like, you know, there's so much data out there. Maybe we're a little bit behind. Like, what should we do? Like, what are my must-have data sets that I just need to know to help make better sense of the world around me? Do you have like a catalog of that? Like, yeah, you need this, this, and the other thing?
So
or is it just open? Yeah.
The thing to understand about Sequentum is we've been bootstrapped. Like I said, you know, we're backed by WorldQuant, but really they gave a tiny amount of seed money. And really, like, I've never had any dollars handed to me. We're just building everything from our profit, right? And which is working, right? We're over 100 employees now. Like,
it's fantastic.
You know, things are going great. But for us, like, we never invested in data analysts, data product managers, in any of the tools that would, you know, do all the analytical work. And so our catalog is really kind of exhaust. So if someone comes to us and said, like, one of our compliance rules is we will not hit a site too hard, right? Mm-hmm. It is very important to us to not disrupt the operation of a site or to harm a site in any way, right? And so for a given customer, we'll look at something like SimilarWeb or data and AI, and we'll look at how many page loads a website typically has on a given day, and we'll stay under 1% of that for a given customer. And then as a company, we'll go up to 5%. And if somebody wants more than that, and this is also telling that nobody really wants the same things. When they're coming to Sequentum, they're going niche for the most part.
And they have something in mind already. It's not like you have to coach them, you know? Yeah.
But basically, if they want more volume than that, then we will store a copy. And the next customer that comes along and says, I want data from Carvana, right? We'll just sell from the catalog. Carvana is very typical website for people to pull data from.
That's a popular one with hedge funds.
Yeah.
But that's wild that you can go up to 5% of all the data scraped for a whole entire company and that you can monitor
of the average daily page load.
Of the average
daily. Measurable limit. Yeah. And we have rate limits in our platform and whatnot. This may seem really, really conservative, but given that, you know, web traffic is what it is, like, it's actually not that conservative. But it's very important to us not to harm sites and,
So that's one kind of mistake to avoid. And if you're talking to somebody who's thinking of, hey, I'm going to do this myself, you know, I'm just going to go into Claude and write a scraper, or just going to tell Claude to scrape data, which is expensive, but, you know, people do silly stuff like that too, right? What would you tell them to avoid? Like, what should they keep in back of their mind? Like, hey, don't make this mistake. But obviously the one that you said, like, don't, you know, have polite scraping, don't overload one single website. Is there anything else they should keep in mind before they undertake an internal operation like this?
Yeah, I would say don't automate CAPTCHAs silently, right? Because that really, the intent and depending on what the CAPTCHA is and where it's deployed really changes the legality of the data that you get pulling from the other side.
Interesting.
So you have to put a lot of thought and memorialize your choices in terms of what CAPTCHAs you decide to automate. If you're pulling data for investment decisions, then it's an SEC governed process. Mm-hmm. Even if you're just a data company, that falls under SEC guidance. And if you're misrepresenting your identity during data collection, that is, you know, basically the definition of insider trading. You know, the SEC regulators will never tell you, you know, oh, proxies matter or CAPTCHAs matter, you know, when it comes to misrepresenting. They'll never tell you that. They're not giving us that kind of clarity. But you have to be very, very thoughtful about how you do this. So, like, you don't want to misrepresent your identity. So even though we use proxies, you have to use proxies, right? If you want to price a banana at a grocery store in Australia, you have to come from an Australian IP address to get that price. So you need proxies. That's a functional requirement. But you need to make sure that if there's any complaint from the website to that proxy vendor, that's going to get routed to you. So you make sure you're not misrepresenting your identity. With CAPTCHAs, you have to be very intentional and memorialize, write down, record your thinking in automating any CAPTCHA, because that's also, in terms of all the lawsuits going on in web scraping, CAPTCHAs are particularly risky. And then also with any terms of service, right? If it's just some sort of, you know, what they call a browser app that's sitting on the website and like nobody ever goes there, and they don't ask you to go there, and they don't send you any notice when it's updated, right? That's not, so far, it's not been considered sort of binding or all that risky to not look at it, from the, at least from the data scraping point of view. But if there's an affirmative, if there's any click wrap that's asking you to affirmatively accept those terms, you're bound by those terms.
Yeah.
You've been notified because it's asking you to affirmatively accept. You automate that process, you have no idea what you're agreeing to. So don't automate that process. We will never affirmatively accept. If you have to log in and create an account, you're affirmatively accepting those terms.
Yeah.
And they can update and change those terms anytime. So you better have a lawyer on staff who's reviewing every change.
Very different from just browsing. Yeah.
A lot of things to think about, right? And competition-wise, like we've had startups come to us and say, can you scrape all of Kayak? Because we're going to do a travel, online travel agency, and we want you to pull all the data so that speeds, you know, our go-to-market. And our immediate answer is no.
Because and Zillow. Also give me everything in Zillow, too.
Yeah, Zillow. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. The answer is no. We won't do that.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, there's things that are definitely going to get you into trouble. Scraping with an LLM is one, but also this kind of how you scrape really matters.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, just you explaining that makes me think that the path of least resistance here is just call the professionals and call Sarah and talk to the team at Sequento rather than trying. That's the impression that I got, and that's a great answer, honestly. So what are you working on right now that's really, really fun that maybe will have an impact on how people consume data in 3 to 5 years, given all the changes? Are you looking ahead? Are you building anything that on like a look forward basis?
Yeah. So the nice thing about Sequentum, and it's so exciting to be at Sequentum at this time, is we have this governed execution layer. So we're SOC 2 Type 2 compliant. We have federated identities, which means that we're, you know, you can use your own corporate identities to log in, whether it's Okta or Microsoft or Google. It's totally integrated. And we have all the right encryption at all the right points. And we have incredible audit trails and transparency into how the, you know, sausage is made, right? Yeah. Not just all the version control, but every agent is human readable text file, which can sync to your own GitHub and, you know, follows your role-based access and, you know, all this good stuff. We also have video of workflow, which is optional. That's a lot of data to store, but we can store video, and we have incredibly detailed audit logs in terms of what requests are made, you know, what's happening at the request level. So, you know, we're sort of like the gold standard of how to architect your platform and the infrastructure for that governed execution layer. And the thing that's really exciting about this now is every agent is also an API, and it's also available via MCP using those that's federated identities. Yeah. So we have this extremely compliant enterprise grade access to our human in the loop and human approved agents. So the access to data is really something that the lawyers approve of.
Right.
Any ops manager, any data analyst, any portfolio manager, they can see exactly what's happening. And yet the developer who's working in Claude, who's working in their IDE and wants that MCP instant access, has
just
it.
Tap into it.
So it's really exciting. And then we, in addition to that, we have, of course, the magic wand. We have the visual editor if you want to make edits, right? We have the magic wand to generate the agent. And then we have this incredibly powerful visual editor where you have these video replays and you can go down into every single data point that's pulled, every data validation and rule to confirm, you know, quality monitoring rule that everything is coming across properly. We have the magic wand, we have the visual editor to confirm, and now we're coming out with the agent builder, which will allow you to generate a lot of these at the same time. So if you're, let's say your portfolio manager comes to you and says, all right, Stan, you know, you're head of data acquisition and data strategy, and I need to, we've decided we want to go into energy. We want to go into energy. There's a lot going on. So please go and stand up all of these, you know, data sets and analysis and research. I want to see, you know, some idea of what you're going to be able to do for me tomorrow, right? So you just use the agent builder and you basically stand up a bunch of these things and you prototype, you know, use the, you know, the data to prototype and sort of figure it out. And then you basically, once you decide on what your strategy is, you can wrap up those requirements and send it off to Sequentum to really operationalize and have that human in the loop every step of the way.
Just got shivers because you're bringing back my days as a data analytics person at a hedge fund. But those were good days,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this is great. It's a really compelling case, honestly. And if folks that are watching this want to reach out to you or want to find you and ask you just how you work with people and just questions about their data operation, where do they find you and what's the best way for them to get in touch with someone like you or someone on the team?
LinkedIn is a great way to reach out. Sarah McKenna at Sequentum. Sarah McKenna is not something you're going to find on Google. There's a billion Sarah McKennas in the world.
Well, we'll have a link to whatever you want
right,
to mention.
Right, but at Sequentum, right? And then I'm also sarah.mckenna at sequentum.com. So happy to meet, happy to talk about your specific questions. I do meet with a lot of lawyers. I do a lot of work on standards in the industry. I'm a steering committee member on the Alliance for Responsible Data Collection, and I'm also a technical advisor on the Web Data Collection considerations that were published by the All Data Council under FISD, the Financial Information Standards Division of SIA. So you can also find me in those conversations.
Amazing. Thank you so much for educating us today and giving us your insights and your experience. Very, very much appreciated, Sarah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stan. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
And everybody, thanks for tuning in to the Momentum Podcast. We'll see you on the next one. Thanks.
Yep. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Momentum. If you found today's episode valuable, don't forget to follow the show and share it with your network. This helps us a lot. To explore how AI can help your firm, visit acadia.im. I'm Stan Altschuler, and I'll see you next week with more practical insights to help turn data into growth and decisions into results with the help of AI.